You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the Political Cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday evening, October the 11th. Nothing quite goes according to plan when you are live and on the air, as we are this evening. Richard Spencer, our first hour guest, has spilled over into the second hour, which was originally reserved for Jared Taylor, as we continue to march through a chronological path of the NPI conference, the European Congress in Budapest, Hungary. And we're going to get to Jared in just a moment. We know that he's on the line with us now. But first, we want to wrap up with Richard, and we don't want to leave any stone unturned. We'd worked all the way up to his imprisonment in Hungary for 3 days. And Richard, right before that last very extended commercial break, I had posed to you a question from our mutual friend Alex Kurtigit, who asked, what kind of questions were you asked during your interrogation, and how did they manage to detain you for an entire 72 hours?
Well, to answer the second question first, as I mentioned, I was actually not arrested for some time. I was not arrested for, probably around 8 hours or so, because this happened after 9 p.m. And so from about, let's say 10 to 8 o'clock in the morning or thereabouts, I was effectively captured without being arrested and without being told why I was being captured and held, or where I was going. And so that, effectively the police can just do that. it's really, they're obviously, using force to do that. So I think, how could they do that? It's obvious. They simply did it. In terms of interrogation, I was in as I said, I went through sleep deprivation and a lot of bright lights and hard benches, probably the best way of describing it. But they did not actually want to get a lot of information out of me. They seemed to, kind of work me over and then not ask me too many questions. When I was speaking with the officer who did speak English, they actually were most interested in whether I knew Alexander Dugin. And my guess is that I think that American racism, so-called, might have caused a controversy amongst the media and maybe even amongst some average Hungarian citizens. But I think with the ongoing civil war and tragedy in Ukraine, I think the government was actually very interested in the Dugin question. And those are some of the few questions that were asked of me. And I should probably just mention this since I just touched on the topic. Dugin was actually threatened with arrest by the government. The government went to their counterparts in Russia and told him that Dugin would be not allowed in the country and he would be arrested at the airport. And the same thing was told to Philippe Bardon in France. So, we have a situation where a government is, capturing and arresting people. They're threatening foreign scholars with arrest at the airport. Again, this is the Hungary of Viktor Orban. It's not the Hungary of Bela Kun. If I'd been a dissident at another time, I might have been thrown into the Danube or something like that. But nevertheless, the intimidation is real, and I don't think we should ever forget that. There are people in governments who do not want to allow us to speak.
Well, I mean, certainly that's true, and obviously that was in play last weekend, and we're going to segue very quickly into Jared Taylor, who played a leading role in the salvaging of the NPI's European Congress after your unfortunate arrest and detainment. And of course, you're mentioning Alexander Dugin here, and it should be mentioned to folks here that he is a political theorist in Russia with ties to the Kremlin, I guess you could say, but by no means a criminal in his own right, other than having the audacity to think. But Richard, were you ever in fear that your arrest or detainment would be indefinite, that you would be there longer than a matter of a couple of days, that you would be mistreated in a way that is perhaps unimaginable?
I did fear that for a little bit, but you know, sometimes I got the sense fairly early on that the police were not interested in that, and that the extent of what I would suffer would be a massive inconvenience. And to be honest, you know, in a way, what I was thinking about was, would this conference need to go on? And I was thinking, we've got to do it now more than ever. We have to prove that we can do this. We have all these people here we need to meet. And I had, you know, obviously no connection to the outside world. I was incommunicado. And when I got back, and I think I first learned about it on Sunday morning, but when I first read email about that the conference had taken place, that Jared and a lot of other people who helped Jared, who I can't mention, that they really just stepped up and they said, you know, one man's down, that's all right. We're going to go forward. It was really inspiring. I mean, I was moved that I have friends and colleagues out there.
Well, we're going to learn from Jared after this next commercial break exactly what happened. Perhaps you can learn with us, Richard, what happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure you already know. But what happened in the conference that you couldn't attend because of your arrest. But you obviously did make it safely back home to the United States, and you were there as we speak right now, and you're on the line with us live from your home. And we're all thankful for that. What was it like when you were finally released? What was the experience there?
Well, it was actually quite funny. I was taken to the airport, and I should back up a little bit before that. As I mentioned, I did not have my passport, and all of my stuff was actually in a hotel. And a friend of mine, whom I hadn't been able to contact, learned of everything, and he actually brought my passport and my computer to the hotel. And when that happened, I was also immensely grateful for his, you know, willingness to do that. So anyway, I had my passport. I was still wearing the same things that I wore on Friday. While I was in prison, I was wearing some of their really tasteful and fashionable garments that they provide for you.
No doubt.
But yeah. But anyway, so I was wearing. It was on. I guess it was. What is it? Monday morning, and I was basically taken by immigration authorities and the police to the airplane, and so we were walking around the airport with this detail. They were surrounding a kind of overdressed young man who was actually talking with the immigration authorities. You know, a lot of you do find people in the bureaucracies who actually do sympathize with you, and they understand what is being done to you, and they understand that it's out of their hands. And I think they understand that what they're doing is wrong. So I actually did, you know, visit with some bureaucrats who clearly sympathized with my case.
Richard, but police officers as well, even during the night of your arrest, sympathized with those who were being oppressed, those amongst our company. Long story short, Richard did make it back home safely. We're going to transition to Jared Taylor after this break and pick up there. What a night.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to excuse me. I'm actually in the process of texting Richard Spencer as I come back onto the air live this evening, thanking him for his contributions to tonight's broadcast. We shared with Richard a chronological trek from the original idea of the National Policy Institute's European Congress all the way through the trials and tribulations of said conference and Richard's arrest. Now, we will continue with perhaps a perspective that even Richard himself was not able to experience, and that is from the perspective of our good friend Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance magazine. Jared, thanks so much for making yourself available to our audience this evening.
It's always a pleasure, James. I'm glad to be on your program.
Tonight more than ever, tonight perhaps more important than ever, because with what had befallen Richard and the role you played in the salvaging of the European Congress, this is a story that we're very interested in. As I shared with Richard, we spent 2 hours last week on the live broadcast of the Political Cesspool speaking with Paul Fromm and Sam Dixon, respectively, about their thoughts and takes on the conference. But you were a man who stepped into a leadership role. Originally, you had been scheduled to be one of the premier speakers of the conference. Little did you know that by the time you landed in Budapest, that you would be its de facto organizer.
That's correct. I showed up in Budapest 4 days early, looking forward to a leisurely period of tourism. I didn't get that opportunity. Before I had even gotten on the plane, I realized that there was a certain amount of government disapproval of the conference. But as it happened, the very day I got on the plane, in the airport, somebody sent me a message saying that the government had decided to forbid the conference. Well, I figured I'd get on the airplane anyway, and we'd do our best to pull off a conference. But for some days before that, we realized that there was tremendous pressure on the conference. The government had said that they disapproved of it. Now, I knew that there were people on the ground in Budapest, and I assumed that they were busily looking for an alternate venue if the place they'd contracted with had canceled. When I got to Budapest, to my absolute astonishment, I discovered that nobody had done a thing, that the place had in fact canceled, but the people who were involved, presumably in Budapest, had not lifted a finger to find a new place. They just all headed for the high grass. I suppose there was a certain amount of plausibility in that, insofar as they were subject to Hungarian law in a way that I, of course, as an American, am not. So instead of doing tourism, it was my job to find an alternate venue, and this in a country where I don't speak the language. Well, the conference was big news by then, the fact that it had been banned. And so I decided that rather than get on the phone and talk to venues in English, trying to drum up a last-minute meeting for 70 or 80 people, I would wait one day for a fellow that I knew who was coming in also early, who could speak Hungarian. He's a Hungarian-American. And so I had him make the calls. So we phoned up a bunch of places, and then we found one that sounded good and went out to take a look at it and signed it up. So that was done, and then Richard showed up the next day. So I was very pleased. I thought that my job was done. We had a venue. He was there. He could take over. Well, lo and behold, the second night he's there, he gets arrested. Well, we then were really we had a problem on our hands because we had to decide what we were going to do. And there was some consideration of just completely pulling the plug, telling everybody, well, look, it's over, the conference has been decapitated. But we had the venue. And so I thought, well, okay, there are a couple of possibilities. I could just send email messages to people who I knew were absolutely solid, and I knew they would not divulge the location. But I looked through the list of people who were there, and that was only about two dozen folks. So I could say, okay, we're meeting at spot X, and we would have dinner with two dozen people we already knew. That would have been a real failure. And so I risked, complete catastrophe by sending an email notice out to everybody who had registered and telling them about a redirection point. You know how redirection points work? The idea on that is that instead of telling people the exact locale, you tell them, okay, we're going to meet at spot X. Then we all walk together to the actual venue. That way, if there's a spy in the group, then he doesn't have an opportunity to tip the police off ahead of time. And the police would have had to come only after we were all already there. Now, what I was...
let me pause you right there, Jared, if I can.
Certainly.
How utterly ridiculous that this be a course of action that was needed to be taken. I've used this term so many times over the course of the last 2 weeks, but that scholars and academics gathering together in peaceful assembly to exchange ideas be forced to undergo actions that drug dealers would have to take, for instance.
I know.
I mean, that is an absolute abomination.
Yes, yes. It's an outrage. But we had to at least let people know what we were doing 24 hours before they had to do something. And so rather than tell them, go to restaurant X, which I had signed up, I told them, go to spot Y, and then we were all to walk from there. Now, how the question arises, how did the police know where Spencer was on the evening they arrested him? I said, perhaps he went into that. But as you probably know, he had sent out an email message to people saying, well, I expect to be at such a place Friday night. Let's come and have a drink. Well, my assumption is that somebody on that list tipped off the police. That's the only way they would have known where he was. Now, it was the very same list that I was informing as to where the redirection point was. So I assumed that there was an excellent chance somebody would tell the police about the redirection point. So the way we did it was I sent email messages to the 24 people that we knew were rock solid, and they went directly to the restaurant. Then I told everybody else, go to the redirection point. And then I also sent a very trusted, capable guy, whose name I don't wish to mention over the air, I sent him to the redirection point to size up the situation. Obviously, if there were 40 police at the redirection point, then he was to head for the high grass himself or just come straight to the restaurant. And the rest of them, they just have to fend for themselves. Well, he sized up the situation. There were no obvious police at the redirection point, and I had told him if there are no police, bring everybody in. Now, if there's a spy and he finds out where the place is and calls up the police, well, then the police will have the embarrassment of breaking up dinner for 75 middle-aged men and looking like fools while at least 20 of the people in the audience film their brutal, heavy-handed tactics on their cell phones.
You have to laugh because it is so utterly absurd. The situation with which you were faced is so absurd. It defies logic.
Crazy.
It's almost a comedy if it had not been with people that we know and love.
That's right.
Hold it right there, my friend. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we are coming up on a commercial break. We're going to pick it up right there as we continue to follow everything in a chronological order tonight. Nothing bigger in our world, in our orbit, than the MPI's European Congress. We spent 2 hours last week talking about it. We're spending 2 hours again tonight talking about it. We'll continue right after this.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend.
All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
We're so fortunate tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to have with us as our live guests this evening Richard Spencer, president of the National Policy Institute, who is with us for the first hour and change of tonight's live broadcast, and now Jared Taylor, editor of American Renaissance magazine. Be sure to not only check out but support his work at amren.com. Jared took a leading role in the conference after its lead organizers, Richard Spencer and Bill Regnery of the Regnery Publishing House, were arrested and expelled from Hungary. And so, Jared, as we continue to march a chronological path this evening, you were getting us to the point where, as if you were common criminals, you know, you are nothing more, nothing less than mild-mannered, law-abiding scholars and academics seeking to peaceably assemble to exchange ideas in a very healthy and normal fashion. But you had to create a redirection point from which people would go to the final location of the conference, which had come under international condemnation, and certainly condemnation from the very highest reaches of the Hungarian government, its prime minister. So that's where we are as the story continues. Jared, take it from there.
Well, to recapitulate the risks we were running, in order to tell all the registrants that we were continuing and to tell them where to go, I had to send messages, email messages, to the people that Richard Spencer had sent messages to the Friday when he was arrested. So I thought that there was a very, very good chance that there would be a spy in that list. There was a very good chance that either the police would be at the redirection point and arrest everybody who showed up or chase them all away, or that a mole would follow the guide to the actual venue, and once there, then call the police, who would break things up. So I packed a toothbrush and a change of clothes because I thought there was a very, very good chance that I was going to be arrested. I was, in effect, breaking Hungarian law by being in the country. They had specifically said all scheduled speakers would be denied access to the country, and if found within the territory of Hungary, they would be deported. So I thought there was a first-rate chance that what had happened to Richard Spencer on Friday evening was going to happen to me Saturday evening. But that was a risk that I was prepared to run in order to do whatever it took to try to pull off a conference. Well, as it turned out, there were no police at the redirection point, and although I was nervous for the first 20 minutes or so expecting the police to show up at any point, they never did. So we had a very successful truncated conference, only two speakers. But you can imagine the kind of spirit and the camaraderie we all had of actually having met and pulled that off. Now, I will give you a theory as to why there were no police at the redirection point and why nobody got bothered or harassed or arrested after we arrived at the restaurant. And my theory is this. I don't know how Richard Spencer described the behavior of the police when they came to the bar to arrest him, but I've heard from a number of people that when they walked in, they looked around with surprise on their faces, acting as if they'd come to the wrong place. And the speculation is that they were expecting people with swastikas tattooed into their foreheads,
right,
armed with the chains and billy clubs and knuckle dusters. And here they found perfectly ordinary, well-dressed, well-behaved people. They were surprised. So my guess is that the police, in fact, did know where we were. They did know where we were meeting. They knew all about the redirection point. But I think some cooler head in the Interior Ministry said had decided, okay, we have made our point. We have arrested the two ringleaders. Go ahead and let these guys have their dinner. We will just look like fools if we go even further on this. That's my suspicion. I don't think we fooled the police. I think they finally realized they were making fools of themselves, and that's why we got away with it. But I will probably never know the answer to that question, but that's my suspicion.
Well, it's a very good hypothesis, Jared. In fact, Paul Fromm last week, as he was on the line with us live from Budapest, it was 2 or 3 in the morning a.m. his time when he joined us, but he was breaking down this from his eyewitness perspective. Obviously, back then we didn't have the full details as we do now. We knew that Richard had been taken away. We didn't know his whereabouts or how he was being treated. Obviously, all that has been resolved. But Paul Fromm hypothesized that he figured as much as you have, that the police expected to walk in on the caricature. You know, certainly the caricature in the establishment media is that anyone, any European or European American who doesn't hate himself must therefore be a jackbooted thug, you know, must be the Nazi that we've all seen portrayed on television so many times before. But obviously that is not the case, and we dispel that myth each and every night here on this program, and as you do in your work, and as so many other thoughtful, well-reasoned people do. But the atmosphere of the conference, let's get to that. After it was being held, and I know that you and a former Croatian diplomat, Tomislav Sunic, who has been a guest on our program, who I've spent a great deal of time with over the years, Tom Sunic, you were the two speakers who were allowed to, I guess, break through the Iron Curtain, if you will. What was the atmosphere? Well, once that, once the gathering had occurred, once the redirection point had played itself out, and once everyone was in the meeting space, what was the atmosphere? Was it an atmosphere filled with fierce defiance and encouragement, or was it one filled with tension and apprehension?
No, it was one of great joy and camaraderie and a feeling of victory that we pulled this off. It was, as you can imagine, after all that we had gone through, having at least a chance to meet, get to know each other, listen to a few speakers, yes, we felt as though we'd really pulled this out of the bag. It was really, really a great feeling, and it's too bad that Richard wasn't there to enjoy it. I think some people doubtless felt a little bit shortchanged because they were expecting a conference of about a dozen speakers, and there were only two left to do the speaking. Now, I must salute Tom Sunic for being there because, in some respects, he had the most to lose of all the speakers for coming in. If he had been arrested, it's very, very awkward to have been arrested in a neighboring country, and he would have lost travel opportunity to the Schengen countries. I suppose Richard explained that. He's banned for 3 years for traveling in most of Western Europe. If that had
happened,
go ahead.
No, I should say, Jared, actually that was one of the few things we didn't get a chance to speak with Richard about.
Oh,
he is, and I'm glad you brought that up. There was so much to cover tonight. But Richard Spencer and Bill Regnery banned 3 years, basically, for all intents and purposes, from Europe. I mean, you're talking about these countries that are part of this pact, but that is basically all of Europe except for Great Britain and Ireland, if I'm not mistaken. So basically all of Europe, they are banned from for 3 years. If this has happened to Tom Sunic, who lives in Europe, this would have posed a great hardship.
Yes, yes. It would have been a terrible thing for him. But, no, he came, and I think, as I say, he had the most to lose under those circumstances. But so he spoke, and I spoke, and as you can imagine, everyone was delighted to be there and delighted to hear us. Now, there's something else that I would like to describe, and that is on Sunday, people had signed up. This is the day after the conference day meeting on Saturday. People had signed up for walking tours in Budapest. Now, we had no information as to how to meet or where to meet for these walking tours, so all of Sunday's activities basically had evaporated. Richard, who knew all about that, was in jail and incommunicado. So one fellow, an enterprising young American, stepped forward and said, well, okay, what we should all do is meet at a particular place in Budapest, and we can sort of organize our own walking tours. And so late that night, I sent out an email message making that very point. And also, we agreed to meet at a particular bar after about 7 p.m. So the conference continued in that respect in an informal way. About 40 or 50 people met at a place called Heroes Square. I don't think he chose that location by pure accident, but
appropriately named. Hero Square. Okay, well, let's pause with Hero Square, and we'll get back with that. And then I want to focus on Jared's speech as well in the last remaining segment we have this evening. Stay tuned, everybody.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Back to get on the show, call us on James's dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Folks, when we get into the third hour, in just a few minutes from now, we're going to transition into a lot of other stories that we've been tracking this week. But we've spent the first 2 hours of tonight's broadcast, as we did the first 2 hours of last week's broadcast, dedicated to the NPI's European Congress, and not 1 minute has been wasted. We are all the way up to the point in tonight's story at which Jared Taylor tells us about the meeting at Heroes Square. And as Jared was mentioning before the last commercial break there in Budapest, Richard Spencer had planned a walking tour of Budapest for the conferees of the European Congress at Heroes Square the day after the Congress was to conclude. Obviously, it didn't go quite according to plan. Jared's going to fill us in on the rest.
Yes, there were a number of tours that had been planned with actual guides who could tell us all about it. But because Richard was in jail, nobody knew where to meet or what to do about that. So this guy volunteered to just have everybody gather at a particular place, which we all did. And we went off on various walking tours of our own. And also, we all met at a bar afterwards, beginning at about 7 p.m. And I don't know how long the younger fellows stayed up, but when I left at about 11 o'clock, the fellowship was still going strong. So instead of just sitting in our hotel rooms or touring on our own on Sunday after the conference, we continued the kind of camaraderie and fellowship that, as you know, is such an important part of meetings of this kind. And I wish I had thought of proposing that, but I hadn't thought about that. And it was this young American who put this all together. And once I made the proposal, everybody was glad to do that, to in effect continue the conference the next day. So that was a real highlight, and I'm delighted to have been able to at least send the email to the people to make the announcement on that.
Well, as you mentioned, Jared, the fellowship and the encouragement that can be drawn from being in the company of like-minded individuals is something that not only cannot be discounted, but is absolutely the highlight of any of these events. You know,
yes.
Certainly the speakers are a draw, and all of the other assorted activities are something that you want to come and be part of. But I mean, we've been through enough of these together to know what it's all about. And I guess I've lost count of the number of times that you and I have shared each other's company. But I remember one most specifically, since the NPI is the focal point of our discussion tonight. And that was, I think I mentioned it at the beginning of the first hour, the NPI's conference in Washington a few years ago, during which me and you and Richard had shared the podium at the National Press Club. I remember sharing a very spirited conversation with you later that evening at the Henley Park Hotel there in Washington, D.C. And it's just, I mean, that is really the star draw of any of these gatherings, is to be able to meet and greet and share ideas.
That's right.
And
That's right. That still
occurred in Hungary, despite the best efforts of the international media and the Hungarian government.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so all of us involved in salvaging the conference in that respect were absolutely delighted with the result. So in a way, it was really the best possible result. We had all of this worldwide attention, thanks to the fact of the cancellation and the arrest and all that. And at the same time, we did have an abbreviated conference, but we had what is really, as you say, the best part of it all. At the American Renaissance conferences, as I like to tell the people, we do our best to get an absolutely first-rate lineup of speakers. But what really makes a conference, is the fact that we can all get together. That's the main thing. And so, really, the speakers are kind of a pretext. Well, I'd like to think that if you're in the lineup or if I'm in the lineup, it's more than just a pretext, but it is just an occasion for people to get together and have a great time and to be among folks who see the world with open eyes rather than squinting and one-eyed the way the rest of the country is.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, Jared, because, you know, talking about the speakers, and I want to talk to you, we're running out of time, as it always seems we do here on commercial radio, but I want to ask you before the hour closes, and it's very important, your thoughts on the future prospects of racially aware European Americans to be able to speak and think and assemble both here in America and abroad. But speaking of the speakers, which is the draw, I guess, to these conferences, even if we all know we're gathering or coming together for the fellowship, you gave, though, what I saw, and it's been posted all over the place, but I saw it at Kevin McDonald's website, a very emotional speech, one that I guess tugged on the heartstrings. What was it like to be a part of a gathering that had been under so much duress and to be able to address that gathering? Because I saw the emotion in your voice. I saw the trembling in your voice, and it was something that certainly stirred my inner soul. What was it like to have been there and to address that crowd?
I have this terrible weakness. When I start talking about our people and what's at stake, I really have to struggle to control my emotions. But I concluded this talk by saying that the crisis is not so clear and the lines are not so firmly drawn, but that for our generation, what is happening now is Thermopylae, it's Poitiers, it's the Siege of Vienna, it's the Battle of Blood River. We are fighting for our lives. And to be able to convey that message to a band of brothers from all around the white world was really a very moving experience for me. And it was a very well-received message, I must say. The title of my talk was Towards a World Brotherhood of Europeans. And my point of departure, of course, was that, okay, I'm an American. I'm about as American as it's possible to be. The first tailor showed up in 1635, so we've been here a long time. But we are Europeans. Everything about us is European. And you can be from New Zealand. You can be from South Africa. We are all brothers. And so I really got emotional in my appeal to this band of brothers we have, really from all around the world, whose destiny is all bound up together.
Well, it was stirring for me to have watched it over the internet. To have been there, I'm sure, would have been much more poignant. But let me ask you this, Jared, and I appreciate you sharing with us your feelings on that question. We've both been part of canceled conferences here in the United States. Obviously, in Europe and those countries, they don't have the same types of laws that we do here. But what do you feel as though is the prospect for our people? And that would be racially aware whites, being able to speak, think, and assemble freely in America and abroad going forward. Will it get worse before it gets better? Should we all steel ourselves here as Americans to suffer the fate of Richard Spencer, or in terms of Europe, you know, perhaps, I don't know, an Ernst Zundel, for instance? Is that what we need to expect before it gets better?
I don't think so, really. We may have our ups and we may have our downs, but I think that the Hungarian government is eventually going to have seen to have acted very foolishly. They got a real black eye in this thing. They thought that we were going to be a bunch of violent, crazy people, and it turned out we are not at all anything like that. Also, what encourages me is the number of young fellows that I meet from all around our European brethren who understand, who are completely sane, who know more at age 25 than I did when I was 45. I think there is just an extraordinary growth in consciousness. And these people, they are smart, they are dedicated, and no matter what the governments do, they will find a way to meet, they will find a way to get their ideas across. I see nothing but progress ahead.
Well, I certainly hope to share in that progress with you, and certainly if it weren't for those torch keepers who are keeping the embers burning here in America and abroad in our motherlands, the countries across Europe, from Scandinavia down to Italy, the length and width of that mother continent, if it weren't for those few who were doing the good work, we would be much further down the road of destruction than we are now. And certainly the days are bleak. I mean, there's things that we can certainly be very depressed about, but there are also things from which we can draw much encouragement and inspiration. And I appreciate you, my friend, for playing a role in that encouragement and inspiration, along with Richard Spencer, our guest for the first hour. It was, I think, certainly a victory for our people and for the basic freedoms that we wish everyone to be able to share in, that you persevered. And I only wish I could have been there to play a role in that success, but I'm glad that we're able to talk about it tonight.
Yes, so am I, and thanks as always for having me on your program, and thanks to you personally, James, for all the good work that you do, all the great work that you do.
Well, Jared, coming from you, that is high compliment and praise indeed, and I take that to heart, and I'll treasure it, and I'll look forward already to our next meeting, whether it be on the radio airwaves or in person. I'm sure both are likely to occur soon, and it'll be my pleasure. Thank you, Jared Taylor.
My pleasure indeed. Bye-bye.
Jared Taylor, everybody, be sure to check out and support his work at American Renaissance Magazine. AmRen.com is the website, and we'll be back, and I'm going to be covering a variety of stories with you in the third hour.
Third hour.
Stay tuned for that.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.